Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 1:57 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, February 5th, in the year of our Lord, 2023. I am sitting on the couch, so the couch chronicles continue. The shoulder is healing, I think. Today's Sunday. Last week, I went to the doctor for a sort of wellness check on my shoulder, and because I was not feeling like I was healing great, I had been off oxy for over a week, and we kind of determined this is obviously a work in progress. There's a lot of issues here with my shoulder. Hopefully, best case scenario, they all just sort of resolve and I heal and get to go to physical therapy and et cetera. But obviously I had a second surgery just over 3 weeks ago. I'm still in a decent amount of pain, but nothing like catastrophic. But he gave me a steroid level prescription anti-inflammatory, which helped because there may be also some spinal nerve issues from a 2018 injury I had. And this is just one of those things where you get to realize that, you know, this is why good health insurance is important, because when I had bum-ass health insurance with an $8,000 deductible in 2018, I, you know, went to a doctor who took my insurance and wasn't a surgeon, was an orthopedic sports spinal guy. And, you know, he said the magic words, which may have been true, but also what I wanted to hear, which was like, yeah, you don't need surgery for this. We'll do an epidural. And we did a few epidurals over the course of a year, and the pain went away, but there was definitely some nerve, not uncommon, but definitely some nerve stuff, which I had gone to physical therapy for and still had exercises that I was doing until recently, just to, you know, sort of try to get my left arm and side as sort of equal to my right, and it never sort of regained, which this is, I think this is a sort of good parallel for my comedy career, because basically the only reason I got jacked ever in my life and strong was for basketball. It didn't hurt, obviously, being like built in terms of attracting other people, men or women. Very open here to compliments, not to everybody's sexual organs, but compliments I'll take from both gender, all genders, excuse me. My basketball career didn't actually yield anything of real value to me. It seems that I should have just stayed a tall, lanky, skinny kid. That would have been much healthier if I'd just done like cross country and yoga. I think that's what I would advise if I ever have a kid. I'd be like, don't do weights or try to achieve anything. Just stretch and walk and do push-ups and yoga and maybe some Pilates. And just that's it. Don't do anything else. Maybe you'll live till 90 if you haven't gotten your father's penchant for bad luck and gigantism. So now we've got a sort of compounding issue going on, which the anti-inflammatory, the steroid kind of helped. So I'm at the end of a 5-pack today, and then my doctor gave me another 5-pack knowing I was going to Chicago. Oh, great segue, JL. Chicago this Tuesday, 8 p.m., City Winery. If you are anywhere near Chicago and haven't gotten your tickets, please get your tickets. Tell a friend. Tell 3 friends. Tell 265 friends that I am at City Winery in Chicago. This is a trip shaping up to be a money loser. Now, granted, I can validate all these losses of money on gigs by saying, well, I'm recording March 31st and April 1st. And I had a great show Friday in Newark. Did about 35 minutes, all new material that'll be going on the new special in April. So that felt good. And I'm just going to validate all these like bad shows where I lose money by saying, well, it's just in preparation. These are all costs to prepare to make a great hour. But, you know, it sort of stinks to feel like I'm probably going to lose money on the trip to Chicago. It is what it is, but, you know, that's not where I thought my career would obviously be. Sort of somehow like back, I'm back in like 2018, 2019 levels. So it is what it is. Hopefully it won't last too much longer. My shoulder pain or my comedy career. The two things causing me the most distress and turmoil. But he gave me another 5-pack for the trip to Chicago. So I should be, you know, relatively pain-free Monday and Tuesday, which is great. That's what I, you know, that's what I do for my comedy. I'm willing to lose money and suppress nerve damage to perform for anywhere between 40 and 90 people in the city of Chicago. But it's a small city, so obviously, you know, you know, you got to go to the real big cities for me to sell 100 tickets. Then this morning, before I went to Mass, I see an update on my phone from Amtrak. My train has been canceled to Chicago. And I go, oh, that's good. Because when you do trains, they're like one a day. It's not like there's like four trains. Oh, just get the other. There's one a day. And I was taking the one, if you are a Patreon subscriber, you know my, or well, if you're a Patreon subscriber who watches or listens to the stuff I put up on Patreon, I got to be more specific. I put up a video of me from last year's much more successful, enjoyable, and optimistic cross-country trip for touring, where I had my car attendant in the Capital Limited, Carlos, who was just a 4.5 minute joy listening to him do the introductory kind of announcements over the, hello, this is your train attendant, Carlos. I will be your attendant from here in Washington, D.C., all the way to Chicago, Illinois. We will have designated smoke breaks. We will be stopping in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We'll be stopping in Toledo, Ohio. Now, we have meal seatings tonight. What I will be doing is coming by your car, asking you when you would like to have dinner, and you can come to the train dinner car, or I can bring the meal to you in your private room. It is up to you. It was like 4 minutes of that, and I just like settled into my chair and was like, oh, cool. And I think I took it on the way home because I had Carlos both, like on my way from DC to Chicago going west, I had Carlos. Then on my way back from Chicago to Pittsburgh, I had Carlos again. And I was like, hey, Carlos, right? He's like, oh, yes, hello. Tipped him real well because he was, and I took those meals in my fucking room like a king, like an Amtrak king. And he was great. And it was just one of those things. It was just a beautiful touch on a trip that, boy, was I optimistic a year. I mean, man, you guys probably know, but man, a fucking year ago. Actually, excuse me. A year ago from now, I had found out the special was fucked up. But a year and a week ago, 53 weeks ago, I was as optimistic about my entertainment career and life as I've been in 20 years. And I will say this, optimism is always, it's always, optimism for me is like a fleeting moment followed by dread that it will never be this good. But I really felt actually really good going on that trip, doing the gigs, etc. It was the best feeling I've had in my comedy career. Coming off a great special, knowing that Billions was going to be airing, I really just, it was the best. I wish I could just bottle up that feeling. And then Carlos, as the train attendant, just was like a nice cherry on top of an overall great vibe. I did what I want. I did a cross-country train trip, which I've always wanted to do. Took a lot of beautiful photos. It was the best. I'm not going to lie. The Brightest Girlfriend was meeting me out in Utah for a show and some jazz games. And even then, and to be fair, once I went to the Utah games, I knew the special had been fucked up, but it was still such a good 3 weeks of my life in so many ways. But now the train's canceled, the one going out. Now, the irony here is, well, I could catch a flight. Well, I'm not sure I want to catch a flight day before. Like, they might be expensive, and I'm not going to lie. I've flown into Chicago many times, but I hate flying into Chicago in the winter. I hate it. Not the last time I flew into Chicago. I've probably flown to Chicago like 8 times, but one of the last times I flew, it was bumpy for 2 hours. That's not an exaggeration. It was a bumpy flight from takeoff to landing. And it was kind of odd because the first hour I was like pissing my pants, but then your system adjusts. And like for the second hour, I was like, well, thank you, evolution and God and intelligent design or anything else, for, you know, allowing your body to sort of say, okay, we can't keep pumping the fear hormone forever, so we're just shutting that down. So the second hour of the flight, I was like, yeah, it's bumpy, but for some reason, I don't care anymore. But I just thought, well, that'll be great. I'm already probably going to lose money on this trip, and now I'm going to lose extra money because I'm going to have to buy a last-minute flight to Chicago. But then called Amtrak on my select executive hotline number, since I'm the highest tier member of their guest rewards program, and got on a train, the train leaving from New York that gets into Chicago tomorrow. That is not canceled. And I got a little roomette on that one. It's not my preference. There's no Carlos. There's no, it's a little like sometimes the trains are a little older than the ones that go out of DC, even though they're both old. Train stands will know what I'm talking about. Probably not actually, but so no harm really done. I actually saved money because it's cheaper on that shitty longer ride from New York to Chicago than the DC to Chicago ride. So that was, crisis was averted. So now I can just go lose a normal amount of money on my Chicago gig instead of like going bankrupt on my Chicago gig. But yes, Tuesday, City Winery. Joe Biden will be speaking 7 p.m. Chicago time. So it's always, I don't know how I have this gift, but obviously many of the fans I acquired over the last several years are politically inclined because it was like a lot of my political impressions that got people excited. So it is kind of funny that like I probably have fans who are like, I actually wanted to watch Joe Biden's State of the Union, JL. Man, any other Tuesday in all of 2023 would have worked out, but not this one. But yeah, so I'm in Chicago Tuesday. But let's get back to the medication. So basically, I'm going to have to find out the week after Chicago, you know, what the fuck is going on with like the upper left part of my body. But, you know, like I said, with sports, it was like I put all that effort into getting jacked and strong and really almost changed my body in college from like skinny, lanky guy to like Jason Momoa-ish. And it was for nothing in terms of it didn't like make me a more valued member of the team. I still ended up being like at best a sixth, seventh man. But I, you know, forced my skeletal system and joints and everything and tendons to maybe close to their natural boundaries. And now, you know, what do I have to show for it? A nothing basketball legacy, but a spine with a couple of discs out of place and a left arm that barely works. So that's my athletic career. And if you can imagine, comedy has done even more damage to my soul. So my soul is like, if my body is slightly weakened from decades of weightlifting and trying to be more than I am, my soul is in a wheelchair with no limbs based on what comedy's done to it. But if that doesn't turn you off, Chicago this Friday and then Rutherford, New Jersey for a very cool show. My friend, libertarian, Lou Perez, funny guy. I don't agree with all his politics, but we do share sort of I don't agree with a lot of his politics, but we do share sort of, I think he's a genuine person. I don't think he's a clout chasing, type of douche. I think he is somebody who has a set of principles and political beliefs. They're not just of convenience, but he's a funny guy and I've always liked him. And he's also a light skinned Hispanic guy. And so I think we also have a bond over our respective person of colorsness not being always acknowledged. But he has this show where I'll be doing stand-up, but it's also sort of a panel discussion show. And the main guest on the show is this writer, Gilbert King, who won the Pulitzer Prize for a book called, In the Grove. Murder in the Grove? Damn it. Look up Gilbert King, Pulitzer Prize winner, 2013, I want to say. My brother actually bought the book for me or gave me a copy of the book. Phenomenal. When I wrote a blog several years ago about sort of a reading list, an advised reading list on, race in American history, it was one of the like eight books I kind of included as like sort of a makeshift syllabus if you're just interested and want a comprehensive cradle to the grave, sort of black people in American history syllabus, that was included because it was just such a devastating, amazing book, really depressing and heartbreaking. But he's like the main guest. And I was like, whoa, that's like, what a great coincidence. Like I've read his book. And so that's in Rutherford, New Jersey, February 22nd. So that's like, I think if you are someone listening who is somewhere near Rutherford, New Jersey, anywhere near, I think it's worth your time for both good stand-up. Dan Natterman is also on the show, very accomplished stand-up comic. and Gilbert King. So it's, I think it's, I'm excited to be part of that show, because that's actually, I mean, that's a, it's just a good show, and a good time. Like, it's not all going to be funny, but it's, I think, going to be a very worthwhile evening. And because Lou, I don't know his co-producer, but I know Lou's politics are most likely left. They are left of mine, and they're probably left of Gilbert King's. Although possibly not, I don't know Gilbert King's politics. But you know, should be a great night. And then I think I have one other thing in February that I'm forgetting. No, I don't. That's it. And then March, we get really into high gear with Montclair. All ticket links are on my website, by the way, except for the Fairfield, Connecticut show. That should be soon. But you got Montclair, March 2nd, Boston, March 3rd, Fairfield, Connecticut, March 5th, Washington, D.C., March 19th. The ticket link is finally up for those, although I still, after 5 emails, can't get a simple confirmation on Chris Lamberth featuring for me. I'm sure he will be, but it's just... That's another, I have another very, I think I've discussed it before. So in terms of how I've been sort of treated by some clubs that I have very long standing relationships with, that one of the frustrating things, and I'll leave it at this, about the this business is that I feel like you can't even get a straight answer from places that you genuinely believe you have a long standing, solid professional relationship with. You know, I'll leave it at that. But the ticket link is up. I'm sure Chris will be there with me. But, you know, it'd just be nice. I've been emailing for 6 weeks. Just kind of, they let you bring your feature. And I was just asking if Chris could host and feature so he could get kind of the double, you know, the two paychecks for the price of one appearance. And, you know, no answer. But it's, I mean, people are busy, but it's just like, you know, it's a little over a month away. Just, you can confirm this. I know the industry and the clubs and the rate of return on everything has, we've clearly established that I ain't shit in this business. No matter how good I think I am or how hard I work, it ain't for me. I'm a fucking shit stain on the underpants of the comedy world. It's fine. But a return email when I'm already booked doesn't seem like a big ask. And then in Boston, I've been asking for return emails for 2 months just to verify the contract terms of my appearance there. And nobody's acknowledged. It's like I say this almost every week at this point. Am I dead? Like, am I the sixth sense of comedy? Like, I think I'm doing things and it turns out I'm not even here. Anyway, DC, Philadelphia, Princeton, New Jersey, and then the 2 special tapings. And, you know, the one thing I can say that I often say is I'm very excited about the material. I think it's going to be another, I don't know, will it be a groundbreaker? No. Will it change my life? No. Will it be an adequate send-off for me artistically? Probably, yes. I feel good about the work and like, you know, getting this all out. So I'm excited at that level of like the material I'm honing for the eighth hour. In other news, today, when I finish this podcast, I will be going over the album, the October 21st, 2021. Some of you might not have even been born when I first recorded Half Blackface. it's going to be like a generational tradition. Where were you? Grandpa, where were you when JL first recorded Half Blackface?
Well, I was in eighth grade, son, and wasn't even a fan of comedy, but my parents were. They said he did good impressions, and they were looking forward to supporting his special that was coming out. And then, 23 years later, my parents died, and my father's last words were, "Why isn't Half Blackface out?" And now, as I lie here in the ICU at the ripe age of 83... I, too, bequeath to you the struggle of waiting for JL's special to come out. It's the year 2103.
Anyway, guys, the math there I don't think worked, by the way, but you get the joke. But I'm listening and coming out, you know, making some edits and coming up the track listings. But I got to say, for all my hype, talking about that first taping. That crowd energy was electric. It was a great night. But after listening to that and watching the one that will be the special, I think overall I'm actually happier with the special set. And I think some of that is because the 2021 material, some of it feels dated, especially as I talk about COVID. Like when I talk about COVID on the special, the May taping, I am acknowledging that it's like already past its time. So that has a little more staying power because I'm already acknowledging, like, I know I shouldn't be talking about the pandemic still. Whereas in October 2021, when I'm thinking this shit's coming out soon, we got a new strain out, I'm not preparing for a 15 to 16 month wait. I think this is coming out 3 or 4 months later. So I'm talking very present tense about COVID. But it's good. Don't get me wrong. It's really good. And there's a few bits on there that I didn't do on the second taping that are really good. But it's overall, I just felt, it almost felt like the past. It felt like the past to me. Now, the half blackface bit, the bit that is half blackface, the title track, is the best telling of the bit. The special is good. The special is very good on that. It's a better telling on the album. So there's, for diehard fans, all 39 of you, there's ample reason to buy both products when they come out, or watch and buy in terms of the special and the album. But it made me sort of sad, not in my angry way, but kind of sad that I almost felt like, much like myself, I was listening to the album going, wow, I guess it's been long enough that even I feel like this album has missed its time. Even though there's plenty of evergreen stuff, it feels like it kind of missed its time. The special doesn't really feel that way. They're just going to not give it to anybody good. I'm sure it's not going to sell to anybody good. So it will die as a result of the ineptitude and of the people making it. But the album, I felt sort of sad listening to it because I was like, oh, yeah, it has been a long time. And this album is dying of old age, whereas the special is a vibrant, you know, honor roll student headed on a full ride to Harvard being gunned down by the people who are supposed to be who are making it. Like the special's being murdered, and the album is dying of old age. And that's, you know, that's tough. I feel like fucking Ted Kennedy watching you know, JFK and RFK get gunned down. I'm like 25. I'm like, what the hell is happening to my special and my album? I'm going to finish that up today, but that's, you know, as you can tell, I'm a little more melancholy today. You know, there's a lot of bad going on right now. The train getting canceled and my back and shoulder being of concern. But the album, it was just sad. It didn't make me angry anymore. It was sad because I felt like the album has now been done a disservice. Like, you know, like sometimes I view my art as like almost like a child. And I feel like Half Blackface had the greatest potential of all my children. It was my best work. It was my most, and I don't like to say courageous in terms of like how people would call it, because I don't want my comedy being called brave. It's funny. Even the stuff that's touchy is funny. It's funny. It's not done. But the personal stuff, the personal stories about racism and sketches I've done and things like that felt like personal risks a little bit to me. And they paid off. They worked in the special and the album, but I feel like for all that potential, it's now been snuffed out, and it wasn't my fault, and it should have never happened that way. So that just makes me very sad because I feel like it was my best work, and now it's being treated disproportionately the worst. You know, obviously it's going to have a wider audience than some of my other stuff, but it's not going to have nearly the audience it needs or deserves. And that's before I even get into my old stories about, you know, the fucking algorithms and whatnot. So that's what's been going on with me this week regarding the comedy and stuff. And hopefully, you know, sometime in February or March, I'll be able to get my albums back up. I have the files and everything, but I still have to make sure that whatever this company did to fuck over my albums is not still applicable, because I don't want to go to another service, upload all my albums for digital distribution so that they're accessible for purchase and streaming again. Because when you do gigs, you want to be able to tell people like, hey, you know, I got 6 albums on Apple and Spotify. Go listen, you know, like go listen and stay a fan. Like there's lots there for you to engage with. You know, I don't want to do a fucking 2 months of touring where nobody who comes to the show can like find my comedy after the show. But, you know, so it's not the best, obviously, right now. But that's the sad news. We always start with the this podcast should be called, do you want the bad news first or the sad news first? But, watching a lot of stuff. I got a lot of reviews for you and things. And now we'll talk fun stuff. Now that I've gotten the vegetables out of the way, let's have some cheesecake. I was watching with the Righteous Girlfriend last night. We were scrolling through some of the Grammy, like videos on YouTube of Grammy nominees. Cause I'm like, I don't know any fucking music. And to be fair, I listened to the Lizzo song for the first time. It's about damn time. Cause all I see, like I'm unlike most people in that when I see something trending on TikTok, I'm like, oh, well, fuck that. You know, like everybody lip syncing and dancing to the Lizzo, like just the core, like the in a minute, I'm in like, and I was just like, ugh, like TikTok makes me hate art. And what was the other one? Oh, and then the Sam Smith one. So I feel like that song, if you listen to all of Sam Smith's music, it's like, did this song, did a TikTok algorithm producer like decide that that is what your new sound should be? Because then it would spread like wildfire on TikTok. That's a thought I've had, which is like, I genuinely believe, and I think about it in comedy and I think about it in music. I genuinely believe there are probably people and producers out there who are like, okay, but you need, some of your songs need to be TikTokable. And I guess that's, hey, that's not a lot different than obviously somebody saying, hey, we need a 2-minute single for the radio. You know what I mean? Or a 2.5-minute single for the radio. I guess that's not so different, but it just feels like the TikTok algorithm is probably like, can probably dictate like what sounds will go viral. Like it's not just like, hey, can you do a short song or a short version of this so we can spread it more? It's probably like, no, TikTok doesn't like a cappella and it doesn't like acoustic guitar. It likes heavy synth bass. And then it just wouldn't surprise me if there are people making music, like artists who are now just like, but do you like it, TikTok? Like TikTok is going to become the Rick Rubin for people where it's like, but does TikTok like this sound? It does. Then I like it. Fuck my creativity and artistry. I want to be best BFFs with TikTok. So, and speaking of BFFs, Sarah Cooper making her Broadway. She's on, or off Broadway. She's in Katie Holmes' new play. I only bring that up because she had a front page article in the New York Times in the arts section. Good for her. It's good to see. It's good to see everybody except one person from 2020 having thriving careers. I bring it up because it was just like, oh, okay. And then somebody tagged me today. Like, and I was like, what is this? And I, as soon as I just saw it, I said, yeah, her and JL Cove and at JL Covan. And I'm sure they thought they were being nice. So I didn't say anything. It's called growth. But I said, this has to be what I think it's about, right? So it's like New York Times article about Sarah Cooper, and then somebody wrote, she got me through 2020 with her humor. And then this guy wrote, yeah, her and JL Covan. And I was like, can you just leave me out of this at this point? Like, it's like you're tagging me in my comedy's obituary. Like my comedy got a case of lip sync fatal case of lip sync cancer. And then you're adding me in an article about how well lip sync cancer is doing. It's just, you know, I don't, It's one thing if I have to be linked with her and I'm thriving. Do you know what I mean? Like Larry Bird doesn't mind being linked with Magic Johnson. Okay. But this is more like I'm being linked to the 1986 Mets and I'm Bill Buckner. That's what it feels like. Even though I didn't fuck up, it just feels like, yeah, I don't want to be linked to that. Like I didn't have, she had platinum level success. I had like copper coins level success. I don't know. Like I had a good year, but I didn't get a terrible Netflix special, a failed pilot, a book deal, a Broadway play, and a movie with Jerry Seinfeld. Like I didn't get those five things. I got Cameo and YouTube and six other things I had to create myself and an audition for Billions that I got. And that's awesome for me. But I don't need to be reminded. I don't need to be added or tagged or like linked. It's just weird. Like, why am I linked to this? Like, clearly I got blown out of the fucking water. Like, why can't I at least have the comfort of failure and anonymity? If you get what I'm saying, like, at least let me just be like, no, she fucking killed it. She's got William Morris. She's having like hashtag career goals, hashtags dreams come true. Good. She left me in the fucking dust. That's awesome. Can you leave me there? Like, cause the only thing that makes that bad is to be reminded like, yeah, you too. Like segue to the George Michael biography that I just finished yesterday, which was phenomenal, by James Govan, no relation. great biography. Like it's so in depth and it takes you through everything in George Michael's life and the talent and the fucking hedonistic fucked up life he was living. And it's just, it's such a, if you like a music biography or if you're a George Michael fan, man, yeah, I can't highly, I wish I'd been able to do a review. I had finished it in time to do a review for the Patreon, but this is your little, if you're not a Patreon person, this is like a little bonus book review for you. George Michael, A Life by James Govan, no relation. I'm kidding. It's obviously Govin as opposed to Cauvin. Oh, who's Cauvin? That's me, listener. You don't know who I am? Anyway, great book. And it just makes me feel like I'm like, let me be the Andrew Ridgely to Sarah Cooper's George Michael, even though that analogy doesn't work in any way other than agents and opportunities. But the point is, it's just so weird to wake up in February of 2023 and having people tag me in posts praising Sarah. Like, it's like, and this has been my frustration all along. It's like, if people don't understand artistic value and talent and just what makes somebody tick, then they're never going to know like, oh, I don't want to be linked to that. Like on any level, I don't want to be reminded of it. I don't want to be compared to it. So, but you know, that was just, you know, once again, every week there's a new Al Pacino Godfather 3 moment where I'm just like, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. So, but George Michael book, very good. Better than very good. It was just a strong, in-depth, appreciative, but honest, just look at his life. I recommend it very highly. But the next book review for Patreon folks will be The Warmth of Other Suns. Shout out to Rod of the Black Eye Tips, who used to read passages from that many years ago. No, I'm not reading Ida, A Sword Among Lions. That's just for people who listen to Black Guy Who Tips. A little inside podcast humor during half Black History Month. So I gave you the shoulder update. I gave you the special, the shows. I gave you a lot of depression. Grammys. I think I cut myself off when I was going to talk about the Grammys. Yes, I did. I cut myself talking about the Grammys. So because I thought about TikTok and that immediately just broke my mind. But the Lizzo song, About Damn Time, I love that song. I know I'm like 9 months behind because I turned away from it from TikTok. But In a Minute, that's like the worst, not the worst, it's all good, but like the song is really good. Now, I know it's bad if I say, hey, could that win Song of the Year? Because Beyonce's up for Song of the Year and she has to win everything this year. I'm on record, I'm not afraid to say it. And the compliment I'll give that album, because a fan wrote to me and said, oh, that album's awesome, we love working out to it. And I did, the caveat I did say when I listened to the Beyonce album, Renaissance, I think, I listened through, because I have a couple of Beyonce albums from the past. The last one I bought was the surprise album, the 2013 album, which I really liked. That I think it's just called Beyonce. But like Lemonade, I watched it and just didn't dig the music that much. Like, I know it was a big kind of pop event, and that's cool. And there's a lot of infidelity tea being spilled. But it was I just thought it was all right. I mean, I like the earlier stuff better, and obviously I'm a big Halo stan. but the new album, I'm listening through and I'm like, I just like to sit around and listen to music, basically. I'm a fucking misanthrope and sloth. Misslothanthrope? I'm trying to do, anyway, a sloth and a misanthrope. But so I usually just like listen to music when I'm working or writing or working out is where you'll hear me listening to like my, early 2000s hate music that was pumping in the college weight room. But as I listened to Beyonce, I went for a long walk to listen to it. And the thing I did say was, but I did walk faster while listening to it. Cause it's a lot of it is very up tempo and like, so it's got value to me, but but my main test for music is often, if I'm just sitting around, am I just going to like listening to this album? And, hater or not, I didn't dig Renaissance. I know it's like kind of the juggernaut this year, but that's just me. I know. I'm a hater. I'm a piece of shit. Whatever. But it's about damn time. I enjoyed that. But then I said, okay, here's who we got to look for. This Bad Bunny motherfucker, okay? He's a weird-looking guy. He's showing up in everything. He's like the biggest artist in the world right now. He was in Narcos, like non-speaking, like a small role, but it was just like, he's so big that people are putting him in big things just to like get some of his fans. He was in Bullet Train, but he's like a weird looking guy. But I was like, okay, he's gotta be doing some good music though. Or I don't know. I don't know any Bad Bunny music because I just don't listen to the fucking radio anymore. Like I just liked it when, like, I didn't have to do any work to learn new music. It would be like in the morning, I'd be like, if I wasn't watching SportsCenter or the news, I'd be on MTV or VH1. So even though, yes, that's curated and everything, at least I'd kind of just get familiar with some of the new music. And then the radio, like even younger, I used to just wake up to like the local, whether it was hip hop or rock stations in New York. And I listened to a lot more radio, like everybody. But once it went like Sirius and MTV and VH1 stopped playing music videos, I lost touch with whatever was hot. I hear about the artists and I'm like, I don't know what they sing. It took me like 8 months to hear a Dua Lipa song, but I kept hearing about Dua Lipa. It took me like 2 years to hear DaBaby song. And I was like, oh, I like DaBaby. He's got some good songs and he doesn't sound like a mumble motherfucker. And then like 3 weeks later, they're like, DaBaby is canceled. He's homophobic and nobody's buying tickets to his concert. And I'm like, is that what happens? I liked two of his songs and his career like imploded. It was like, did JL happen to stream any of my music? God damn it, JL. So, and it sounds like I'm joking. That's exactly what happened. Like I finally like was like, all right, Lil Baby, DaBaby. I liked DaBaby's voice. I liked the raps that I heard, like both guest and his own songs. And then like less than a month, he was having like a homophobia controversy. And then like his ticket sales were like plummeting. And I was like, oh shit, sorry, DaBaby. But so I said, let's listen to some Bad Bunny. So we go on YouTube on the smart TV and I'm just looking like for what are the big, like which ones have a lot of views, like roughly gauge like the most popular. So the first one, they're all in Spanish. I only remember the title of one song, but it was like a newer song. And it was just like, kind of like a hype up song. But I was like, it doesn't sound like this guy's singing that much. And I was like, I don't know about this. I mean, I get it. It's like for, like a culturally cool video. Cause it's like, he's in the Bronx and like the block is jumping and he's like getting everybody hyped up. And I'm like, I don't know about that. It had 624 million views. And I was like, that's, I don't know. Okay. Okay. Bad Bunny. And then I listened to a second song, which had like 620 million. And these were like within the last year. So I'm guessing these are like part of his Grammy eligible album this year. That's up for like a lot of awards. And I was like, okay, this one's better. Cause he had like some dude singing hooks who was doing like 2/3 of the work. And I was like, all right, this isn't bad. This isn't bad. Okay. Okay. Let's listen to some more. Then I got into a run of like 5 different songs that have whoever invented the reggaeton, or maybe I think they're calling it like Latin trap now. That one beat for reggaeton, I hope they patented it, because it is being used every any variation of that, sped up, slowed down, it is the foundation of the last 20 years of like reggaeton music. And so he had a few of those, and I was like, I don't mind this. It doesn't sound unique to me, but I know he's also cultivated this kind of look, and he's sort of like claims to be, I think, sexually fluid. So he's like hitting the zeitgeist culturally and sexually, and like just kind of creating this, like it's almost like he's like, I'm not sure. It's just, it's like, whether it's true or just marketing or both, he's kind of hitting a lot. Like, he's non-threatening. It's not like he's some machismo jacked Latin dude. He's just like, it's kind of giving off this vibe. Like, I'm too cool or confident or like love myself to give a fuck. So like, I got a weird look. I got like, I do weird shit in my videos, blah, blah, blah. But of course, all hot, bootylicious Latin women just dancing around everywhere. So, but maybe he's creating like a women like him, gay LGBTQ people kind of vibe with him. And then he's also like not threatening. It's not like he's going to steal you. He will steal your girl, but it's not like you feel like he's going to steal your girl. He's like comic relief. He comes in with that Pete Davidson like assassin mentality maybe. But then I said, oh, this video has 1.2 billion plays. And I want to say it's called Dakiti. And I said, okay, let's play this. Now, this didn't sound like this shit was just some straight up house pop. And I'm listening to it and I'm like, oh shit. Okay. Now, like, I literally just bought it on my iPod. I'm like, now if you tell me this is why he's big, I go, absolutely. Now, he was already huge before that song came out. That song came out in October 2020. Shows you how fucking into music I am. But this song is fucking, I love this song. And thank God the video has translations, obviously. But I said, okay, let's see, when did this come out? Okay, late 2020. So pandemic, I was too busy saving the world with my comedy skills, not paying too much attention to music. And it wasn't, and by the way, to show my laziness, it doesn't lend itself, at least in my TikTok algorithm, to like TikToks. It's like it's not a TikTok-y song as far as I can tell. So it wasn't hitting on those places that flood you with like, oh, we're all lip syncing to this now. But I looked it up and I was like, asking the Amazon device, like, how high did Dakiti by Bad Bunny get? And it was like, it was number 1 on the Hot Global chart and reached number 5 on the American Top 100. And I was like, God damn. Like, I know Despacito was like a number 1 song, so it's not new. It's not like Latin songs now aren't, Spanish language songs aren't now able to peak the charts. But I was like, this shit hit 5. And it wasn't Despacito I heard a million times and I'm not even paying attention. So it didn't reach that level, but I was like, this shit is good. So then I was like, okay. And then I watched a live video of it somebody took from a concert. And I was like, man, I'll never go to a Bad Bunny concert. Now, people who know me would think that's crazy. They're like, but JL, there's going to be 19,000 scantily clad Latin women fired up and ready to go. And I go, yeah, but I'm there for the music, okay? And he comes out. It seemed almost like it was an introductory song. because like the guy who did the first part of the verse is singing, and then out comes bad bunny. I keep wanting to say bad baby, but that's the Cash Me Outside whore. Excuse me, entrepreneur. And he comes out and he's singing, and then they get to the best part, the when the beat drops. And they have pyrotechnics go off. So I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, that's fun. But then he stops singing. And all you hear is like 20,000 women like, na, 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 na. And I'm like, I didn't come here to hear you sing. Like, no. And I don't mean this in like that Steve Harvey King's a comedy way. But no, I'm not like, and you're letting them sing the best part of the song. Absolutely not. So you got my 129 on iTunes, Bad Bunny, but you're not getting a $400 ticket out of me to hear pyrotechnics and women singing off key. No, thank you. No, thank you. But that has been with the Grammys tonight. That's me catching up on the Grammys. So I assume Beyonce is going to win everything, and she'll be the winningest artist of all time, which is a great accomplishment. Obviously, when Michael Jackson won like 8 for Thriller in 1983, there were like 10 awards total. so he dominated the evening when they were like, but now it's like best vocal collab between a 6'3" person and a person of indigenous descent. there's so many categories that it's like, you know. The stats are a little juiced, okay? Let's just be honest, but yes. No, the Beyonce hate shall cease now, okay? I like Beyonce. I just don't love her. I mean, I could love her as, like, a person, but as an artist, I'm like, you got enough of my money. My iPod has purchased enough of your music where I can have an opinion. But, when you win, like, 100 Grammys and there's, like, 108 categories every year. It's like if the NBA added a 25-point line and it was like, Steph Curry dropped 225 points. Take that, Wilt Chamberlain. It's like, well, yeah, technically he now has the record, but come on. It's a little juiced now. Anyway, more content reviews. Great documentary, in my opinion, on Showtime that I was very eager to watch, and I watched it yesterday, called Stand, about Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, formerly known as Chris Jackson, a standout high school and college superstar who became a legitimate, excellent NBA player. But basically, imagine if Steph Curry, the thing is, he really, like when you're watching highlights in this documentary, he really was Steph Curry before Steph Curry. Now, the game wasn't the same, so he didn't get, like, nobody followed his style of play, so it was like he didn't get to be sort of the pioneer that Steph Curry is. But, I mean, and he was a better athlete than Steph Curry in terms of, like, vertical. Like, he was in the dunk contest. He was, like, a highly touted high school player. Obviously, he didn't have the career or the freak showmanship of Steph Curry, but you watch those highlights and you're like, this dude, like Steph Curry kind of broke, like was like a cheat code in terms of his shooting form and quick release. Chris Jackson was doing Steph Curry, but like on a pure, like classic high elevation jump shot. And then he converted to Islam. So that's when he went from Chris Jackson to Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. And oh, by the way, when you see this dude is aging like a fine wine. And I say this with, you know, with Bad Bunny bisexuality vibes. Man, like I got to stay. My hair is starting to go silver a little bit on the sides. I will be moving to Florida or California once my hair is a majority silver, because that tan with a natural silver. I mean, this dude is just, he is aging so well. I mean, great for you for being an NBA player and star and activist and standing on your principles, but I'm just jealous of how well you're aging, sir. But he stopped standing for the flag after he became as he evolved in his Islamic learning, and there's like some people talking in and saying like, yeah, he was like, it wasn't that he was militant, but he was like, you know, growing in the religion and learning and sort of like, you know, evolving. And there were some bumpy spots in terms of his approach to things. But he stopped standing for the flag. And it was like Kaepernick, and they make this point in the documentary, like he was by himself because Kaepernick, it divided the country, but there were a lot of people on his side and he made money off of it. I'm not saying that was his intention, but he had, you know, he was able to, he lost money off of it, of course, and he lost his career. I'm speaking of Kaepernick, but he also got development deals and endorsement deals. And I'm not saying that replaces it, but there was both opposition and support for him in large numbers, and social media and marketing kind of helped with that. And then you talk about like the 60s where it was like a social movement. So even though, yes, it was dangerous and admirable that people like Bill Russell and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Jim Brown took stands and things like that. Of course, it was dangerous and admirable. There was once again a movement behind them as well, supporting them, even though it was dangerous. And the thing about Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf is that in like 1994, 96, 97, he was kind of by himself. Like there was no social media. There was no like major movement in society. He was just by himself. And it was an incredibly sort of admirable and strong stand he took in terms of what it cost him, because it cost him everything. And I highly recommend the documentary. I just, as a basketball fan, I really enjoyed watching it. And it was he's a very worthwhile subject, for sure. I just highly recommend it. So that's on Showtime. I already gave you a book recommendation. And let's talk about 1883. Now, I've talked extensively about how I don't think Yellowstone is a good show, even though it's a very big hit show from a writer who has written 3 movies I own on Blu-ray, Taylor Sheridan. We're talking Sicario, Hell or High Water, and Wind River. But I wanted to like Yellowstone. It's not even that I wanted to like it. I expected to like it because I was like, okay, we got Kevin Costner. But more importantly, we got Taylor Sheridan being given like free reign to create a new world. I love his movies, but after those 3 movies, man, it was like he did that terrible movie with Angelina Jolie and John Bernthal. I mean, I thought that movie fucking sucked. It was during the pandemic. It was on HBO Max. It was going to be in the theater, but it's like about firefighters in like the Wyoming type area, fighting wildfires. And then Yellowstone, though, I was like, okay, let's go Yellowstone. And man, I watched 2 seasons of Yellowstone. I think it's a fucking ridiculous pile of vulgar nonsense. But I said, okay, 1883 is like a total, a few people have recommended to me. And it's like a standalone. It involves the like lineage of the characters in Yellowstone. But it's really just like, a chance to do like some period dramas. So I watched it. I just finished it about an hour before doing this podcast. It's a one and only. It's just one 10-episode like limited series. And it's got Sam Elliott. And I think the problem with Sam Elliott is like after he did A Star is Born, he should have won Best Supporting Actor for that. Everybody in A Star is Born should have won in 2018. I stand by that position. Tell me something, girl. And his big moment in that movie, he was kind of the cowboy brother. But is when he kind of realizes his brother, he tells his brother, like, basically they have this, like, this last moment together. And Sam Elliott just pulls out of the driveway, like, holding back tears. And it was just a very powerful visual. And I think Taylor Sheridan, who went from less is more to more is more in terms of his philosophy of film and television production, he has Sam Elliott like cry like 6 times in this show. Like Sam Elliott is literally doing one of 2 things. I will fucking kill you. You understand what I'm saying? I will put a bullet in your fucking face if you look at me like that. And then every other episode, he's like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I never thought we'd get to this place. And I'm like, he's like emo Yosemite Sam, for Christ's sake. What is going on here? It was like the restraint in A Star Is Born is what made that moment so powerful. It was a tough older man, toxically, masculinely holding back tears. Instead, Taylor Sheridan's like, yeah, I love that. But you know, it'd be even better if you threaten to kill everybody every episode and then you cry every fucking episode. Imagine if we take the A Star Is Born formula and multiply it by 5,000, Sam. What do you say?
Well, I think that would be a wonderful idea, Taylor Sheridan. But if you don't do this, I will fucking kill you. Beef, it's what's for dinner.
So, and the narrator is this hot blonde. She's like the daughter of the family, and I don't like her narration, if I'm being honest. It's too much. It's too, I don't think the land loves us. I think the land hates us. And that's the struggle we need to deal with. Hate and love. It's too much, and I'm turning her into Joel Osteen. But overall, I think, you know, I was very impressed with Tim McGraw. Tim McGraw and Faith Hill are kind of the stars of this, along with Sam Elliott and the blonde actress who plays the daughter. I would say it's solid because Yellowstone is modern. So it's like, it's just like, let's all fucking applaud the rugged bad boys of like the mountain states. Whereas this one, at least there's like some historical elements and you just... The thing I think was best about the show 1883 is just conveying how dangerous life just was. Like, in other words, they're moving German and Dutch settlers from like Texas to Oregon and just getting there. The elements, crime, native tribes, crossing rivers, infections, wild animals. You're just like, you do get an appreciation for how badass and how, you know, I said this, I forget where we were going, but sometimes I just marvel at everything. We're so lucky in some ways because we can't do anything now, but thank God things got done for us, whether it's the interstate highway or rail tunnels or coal digging. I know coal's bad, but I'm just saying for much of our history, that's still how we needed to get energy. These dangerous jobs, these that there are dead souls, generations of dead people who lived anonymous lives but contributed so much more, at least to a lasting structure in society. Whereas, like, what have we contributed? Content? You know, like, I always say, whenever I walk by buildings, sometimes I just go, you think like a construction worker ever brings his kids by and goes like, I helped build that. Like, look at that thing. I worked on that for a year and a half. That's cool. That's a cool thing. And I think that sometimes I just look like a train tunnel, like, or some shit where, you know, people died. Like the Empire State Building was built in fucking 16 months. I'm sure dozens of people died making it, and they die in anonymity and we don't know their names, but they helped be part of history and part of the landscape and part of the skyline, even though their little part is forgotten. They are part of a greater thing. And I think that's the idea that you sort of get, like, the you know, the courage and the spirit of people kind of just going out west. Now, I also thought in my mind, I was like, yeah, you know, when you have white people in the 1800s murdering and slaughtering each other, it's like, oh, that was tough. But when you have it in like other communities, maybe later, that are going through their own struggles, it's like they're animals. They're not civilized. It's disgraceful. Everybody has been animals in this country. Everybody has been a piece of shit. Some people are still pieces of shit and animals, but like everybody, and it's just the way we romanticize one storyline of fucking savages in this country. Like when white people were fucking violent savages, it was the adventurous spirit of the West, and that's how a nation was built. And it's like, well, yes, and also it's fucking, they were fucking disgusting cretins as well. But I say that in all appreciation for what the show's doing, which is just like, yeah, like in one episode, they're just crossing a river with like foreigners who don't know how to swim. And like some of them drown and you're like, damn, like it wasn't even like, it was like water that was like 5 feet high, but they were so scared and they'd never been in water that you're like, man, like one woman gets bit on the ass by a rattlesnake and like she dies and you're just like, fuck, this is like taming, I mean, taming the wilderness, you know, for, well, and yes, okay. And I keep doing this because I just always hear somebody echoing in my head going, well, you know, the native peoples had no problem with it. They mastered the land in a conservationist way that didn't involve genocide and slaughter and white supremacy. I know. I'm grading it on a curve. If you're some Dutch fuck who's never seen America and you march 1,300 miles in the winter, I still give you credit because it's not your game. You joined a different sport and you still made it. So I'm giving you credit. Yes, of course, other peoples had mastered it. Yes, but this country is what it is, good and bad, because a lot of people fucking pushed themselves to whatever their respective limits were. And so I don't think it's a great show, but it was like, there's very strong, solid elements. Like, in other words, it still has Yellowstone-iness, but now with the kind of value of a historical context, I think the show has more value than Yellowstone. But it's only one limited season, so I don't think I would stick with it. I kind of stuck with it because I was like, it's 10. Let me just see how this wraps up. But yeah, so there, some reviews. I haven't been able to make any, you know, I apologize. Obviously, there's still some great stuff on the Patreon, and I'll be posting some train content on my trip to and from Chicago. So there'll be some bonus stuff coming out. Obviously, the book reviews. I have some sketch ideas that I'd like to do, but the shoulder has really fucking incapacitated me in terms of doing a lot of stuff, and including just writing. So I've been a little, you know, my YouTube channel really took a dive in January because I've just, you know, barely been able to do, I can't really keep up with the pace that I was doing because I'm just not feeling that great. But I did manage to eke out like 16 cameos in 2 days. So thanks everybody who ordered one via the promotion, the 50% off promotion. But always a good time to remind you that Valentine's Day is coming up. And, you know, I had somebody order a cameo featuring Cory Booker, Mitch McConnell, Andrew Cuomo, Donald Trump, and Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey. So just to name a few of the at least politically themed impressions I do. But I've got a lot of stuff that I've like kind of prepared and want to work on and make. But it's just been a rough, you know, December 21st is just a... You know, I hope it's not a fucking tragic day in my life. I hope it's just a little bit of setback with the shoulder, but we'll find out when I get back from Chicago. Hopefully I get generally good news about my healing and everything else. So I'll keep you informed. But for Patreon folks, what did I just post? I posted a book review and I can't remember if I posted something since the book review, but I will be posting at least one thing from the trip, perhaps a train podcast episode. And hopefully I can get you and probably some clips, some stand-up clips. Obviously I'm bringing my camera to Chicago. So there'll be some good stuff there. And then obviously we'll have our live chat and, a book review of Warmth of Other Suns later in the month. And if you are a big fan of mine and you're not listening to Making Podcasts Great Again, check it out. It's, I can't believe I'm still doing it, but it is, still funny, shockingly. So, go check that out. That's free. And hope to see you at a show. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Thank you. A few people left reviews. We're on the cusp of 200. So if you're still listening to this and you haven't left a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, please do that as soon as you can. Thank you. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate your support. And that's it. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I will see you next Tuesday.